This is a forum on the topic of garbage. And then you can begin the tape now, Dan. My name is Nancy Vignac. I'm the summer program coordinator here at Holden Village this summer. And I'm going to be moderating this forum tonight, just to give all the other people who usually moderate a chance to relax a little bit. I want to say a few things about forums at Holden. Generally, what we try to do is have some brief presentations in the beginning to get the conversation started. And we have three people tonight who have agreed to share with us different perspectives on the topic of garbage. When it's time for them to do their presentations, I'll just have them introduce themselves so that they can reveal whatever identity it is that they want to share with you. When we have forums, we attempt to talk about an issue from our own perspectives, and we certainly urge you to share your own thinking on this subject. And that includes your feelings. If in some way this touches your feelings, that's fine. We're certainly welcome you to share your feelings also. We do ask that you be respectful of other people. You can certainly talk freely and openly about ideas, but be kind to people. We are not attempting to reach any kind of conclusion in this forum. Those of you who have a need, you know, for the evening to reach some climax and some, you know, overall conclusion, you probably are not going to be satisfied. It's a chance for all of us to explore an idea in some new ways and begin to think about some new ideas, but not to attempt to reach a conclusion. And we will end right at 10 o'clock. Those of you who want to stay on for informal discussion after that are certainly welcome to do so, but we need to come to an end. And the only way we'll end is through time. We certainly won't end because of some sense of reaching a conclusion. So we're going to begin, and we're going to ask David to talk first and share a little bit about garbology here at Holden.
Okay. I am a garbologist this summer, and I think as all of you have been told during orientation or observed either through being in garbology or just watching at work, the village tries to approach the disposal of its waste products seriously, in the spirit of the way we should deal with our waste. And as those of us who were at the session at 6:45 found out or have been talking, sometimes what we do, what we think we know what we should do, is up to question sometimes. So, I mean, it's Holden's basis upon which we act is scriptural on stewards of the earth. But we're open, I think, in the Science and Technology Week this week to really learning some new ways that we can be more efficient in what we do and treat the earth better. I think the overriding concern, what we try to do is the earth is our mother. It should be, you know, we need to take care of it. What we throw away at Holden goes in four areas. Anything we can recycle, we do, even if it is cost money. And that is something which we can get into as far as the economics versus the moral aspects of how we act. But at Holden, it's a moral consideration. We're shipping a load of newspaper and cardboard out on Thursday, and it will probably cost money to do that. And as our operations manager, as we was talking, he really questions whether that, I mean, with the fuel used to get it down and on the barge, I mean, it's a matter of discussion whether that's the best policy to take, but that's what we're doing right now. We recycle all of our aluminum, glass, hazardous waste where we are storing until we can find out what to do. That would include batteries, motor oil, things like that. We incinerate anything that cannot be, paper that cannot be recycled, and the incinerator at Holden is up on second level, up just right up the hill. The incinerator is another dilemma that we face at Holden, is whether to, the incinerator is a dual burner type that with two different burners, one to burn the material, the other to burn some of the smoke and take out some of the pollution. It's diesel powered. The way it's been working for the last 5 years, we have not been using the second burner because of concerned with fossil fuel pollution. But it's been pointed out that perhaps that's incorrect, the way to approach it, because we are putting more pollutants into the air, even though we're not using as much fossil fuel. So that goes to show how, like what Terrell was saying, some of the choices are not clear cut in terms of how to approach. But we incinerate all of our like wax paper, all of the paper that we use, napkins, such like that. We compost all the food waste in the compost piles. Just follow your nose up there, you'll find it. Our compost pile works, although it doesn't work as well as it could with, you know, providing oxygen and so forth to it. But then the lawns and gardens department uses that for potting soil and for planting and so forth. The fourth area then is we have to bury, dispose of anything that cannot be put in the other three categories, and it's stored and eventually put in the tailings. And there are some problems with that. What happens if the bags decompose? It's going to leak. We don't bury anything that is toxic. We store that separately, but Holden's collection system is in need of study as far as what we're doing to the tailings. And the tailings themselves are, of course, a hazard, as the is dealing with right now. So that's, you know, how Holden's staff, five or six people each day, work at collecting and sorting. But I think one of the areas that I've been amazed by is how much waste is inherent in the way we live. There are certain types of packaging, usage just in using paper napkins as opposed to cloth or whatever, that is just, they're byproducts of the type of society we are in. And Holden, you know, we bury maybe five or six flour bags a day of refuse that we can't do anything with for 400 people. And most landfills, I guess, are made up mostly of newspaper and yard waste, which you know, we don't even bury that. It was a show of how much more of that most landfills take. But that's how Holden deals with its garbage, and I think it's quite an experience. I would encourage all of you, it's either to find out, either to be involved in garbology, one, just to look at it or be involved if you'd like, or to find out for sure in your community where it goes and what's done with it, because the old idea, out of sight, out of mind, is certainly something that once you've been involved in seeing the actual process, I think you're not going to be able to just dump it and forget about it. You're going to want to know what happens and be much more concerned from a political viewpoint and want to really work to make it happen in a better way.
Thank you, David.
I'm John Marty, and very interested in waste issues in a number of ways, but I guess I'm here as a state senator in Minnesota who's carried a number of bills relating to waste management. A lot of the things that David has talked about are things that Holden Village is a small example of what society at large faces, and Holden is, as you mentioned, doing something about it, though often at some additional expense. Society has changed greatly in the last 50 years. I don't know that we would want to go back to old things. Whenever somebody says, well, a lot of plastics aren't recyclable, industry says, hey, well, you say we should get rid of plastics. Well, you want glass shampoo bottles. And of course, nobody thinks we should go back to glass shampoo bottles. And a lot of the things, the packaging waste and so on, comes about because of simple convenience. We are a more productive society in terms of the way society measures productivity than we were 50 years ago. We spend less minutes of our day taking care of our own personal food and our own personal needs, and more time with leisure, more time with studying, about doing things that don't relate to our own personal life. And convenience is something that certainly we pay a price for and we get. I remember not more than 10 years ago, the only way you could buy Campbell's soup was a little can of concentrated soup, where one can was doubled in quantity when you added water or milk to it. That was the way you bought it, totally recyclable can, and that was it. Now you, then they started having mini microwave, or mini one serving cans that's not concentrated anymore, smaller quantities, so much more packaged per thing. Now they've come out as of a year or two ago with this great thing that comes in a big box, and then inside that it, I think it is a soup and sandwich kind of thing, and a smaller meal than the original can, and probably 3-4 times the packaging. It is presumably more, well, it is more convenient. People wouldn't do that. And some of those things are for convenience sake. The others you can't argue are great for convenience or much of anything. The little juice boxes that are not easily recyclable and have very tiny, tiny quantities of juice, and having little kids who have used them at times to have grape and orange, grape and cherry and other kinds of drinks in them, if you squeeze them a little bit, it shoots out the straw and all over their clothes. So they're not convenient, they're not cost effective. There's very little reason for them other than they were a clever marketing tactic. They look kind of convenient, and so they sell them in that way. But we're getting to more and more waste per person. And I would argue several things that we have to do in order to address this problem. First of all, we got to recognize we have a real problem, none of which has an easy answer to it. Nobody wants landfills near them. They shouldn't want landfills at all because they're a pretty lousy way of dealing with things. And when we got out of the garbage burning a number of years ago because it polluted the air too much and we started dumping it in landfills, we paid no attention to what happens to the stuff that seeps out the bottom, and so we now have problems with addressing that and the groundwater concerns, and it's not cheap and it's not easy to address. Now we're going back into incineration, generally safer than, a lot safer than it was with the old kind of incinerators, though the old ones are still burning in many cases too. Somebody told me recently that they still sell furnaces with home furnaces that have little doors you can open up to pitch the garbage into. And as David referred to earlier, the burn, Terrell can talk about more later, depending on the temperature of the burn, you can do a lot to control the pollutants that are going out. So there's certainly, while the incinerators may be better, we still, in most of society, including my own state, 2/3 of the batteries that have mercury and other things and get pitched in the garbage, and that gets burnt in there, and they test the mercury in the biggest burner in our state, the state-of-the-art burner, they test it 3, 4, or 5 times a year for mercury, and every once in a while it's way off the charts. And what could cause that? Well, somebody dumped in a bag of batteries that day. The other times it's fine. How much mercury are we putting into the air? Very toxic substance. We do control some of those things, and it's a whole lot better than the old incinerators. But there are problems with incineration. Recycling, as David said, is not just true here. Recycling generally in our society right now costs money. The good news is it costs less money than disposing of some other responsible way. And I would argue if we set up the system right, we're going to have a system in which it's cheaper. I mean, if you think of the logic of the system, if we produce a product that gets reused or recycled, it should cost less to get the paper scrap processed in a way that can be reused, is perhaps a lower grade of paper, but reused, than to cut down the new trees and process it into paper in the first place. Maybe not for office paper, but for certainly for grocery bags, which are almost all recycled, newspapers. We have to shift the direction we're going in those things. But right now, recycling costs money for most things other than aluminum cans and at times newspaper and so on. It's just a lot cheaper usually than just dumping it. But I'd argue one of the things we have to do is convince the public, buying in larger quantities, the large economy size. People used to label the big box of cereal as the economy size. The bigger the package, the less garbage there is for the product. You buy a little tiny package of cereal, it's half package. You buy a big thing, it's 1/10 package. Those are serious things we ought to be promoting in the public. So we ought to change public buying habits, trying to reduce waste that way. But equally important, I think we as as a society, have to work at changing the way products are produced. If you produce a product, you ought to be thinking about the cradle to grave of the product. You got to think about what's going to happen after it's consumed, after it's used, after the packaging is there. And that means such things as simply taking toxics out of it. Why should you buy an antifreeze jug that contains cadmium as a coloring agent for the jug, just so they can market it better because it's a more colorful jug? Then you have a toxic substance in the waste and you can't really recycle it. And there are all kinds of things that we should be doing to make products, both the packaging and the product themselves, more recyclable, reusable in various ways. And so I think government has a role in that way. It also has a role in forcing public behavior change. Forcing is a bad word. Mandates in Minnesota is a big buzzword that you want to avoid in government. I've carried a number of bills on this stuff that one could criticize as being a mandate. Yard waste in the Twin Cities area, yard waste was about 15% of our waste stream, our solid waste stream. I inserted a little provision in a bill several years ago saying yard waste could not be mixed in with what we call mixed municipal solid waste. By 1990, that was 3 years earlier, so it was not a big controversial item, no discussion, no debate, passed as part of a big waste bill. And 3 years later, we got rid of 15% of our garbage overnight by forcing it to be separated. Most of the haulers will still take it to a compost site for $1 a bag, which means if you don't want to compost it on your own, they're going to pick it up. But little changes like that, that's a mandate that forces people to change their behavior. But if you think about the long-term costs of things, it's a whole lot cheaper to deal with it responsibly at the beginning rather than ignore those costs, which are a real cost to society in the long run. I'll shut up there and have plenty of other things I could say as well.
Thank you, John.
My name is Terrell Chang. I'm a licensed engineer in a number of states and in British Columbia as well. I've been in the solid waste field for 12 years now. One of the things I was reminded of tonight is that solid waste is not only a difficult topic, it's also an emotional and a controversial one. As I tried to put together a couple of talks, feeling that this was Holden Village, one of the things I thought was very important was not to emphasize the technology approach. I have opinions of most of the issues that John and Dave have mentioned. There will be others in the room with a scientific or engineering background that might have the same or different opinions. But I think one of our focuses here at Holden ought to be to ask ourselves, what are we trying to do and how are we doing it and what are the costs? And I do not mean economics. In fact, economics is one of the least important costs. We have an example in sewage treatment. Holden in particular is very sensitive to the sewage treatment issue, but if we were to go to a city, people say that's a service I'm willing to pay for. It's a requirement for health and human welfare, and I don't care. We will do it. It doesn't matter that it doesn't make money. Okay, we're not quite to that position yet in solid waste. It does cost money now. I will disagree with John in terms of just purely from a dollars and cents economics, what will three hauling firms give you in bids? It is still, I will contend that in most cases it's still cheaper to landfill. But that's because of a lot of baggage, whether they're tax laws, interstate commerce laws, local regulations, all kinds of conditions cause that to happen. It has nothing to do with whether that's a just, and remember that's one of the issues we deal with here at Holden is justice, equality, equitability. That's where it gets very fuzzy. And I guess as a technologist, I would say it's up to each one of you in your individual communities and in this community itself to decide what you think is right, what is just, for whatever and whatever basis, and I will assume for the most part we use our faith as a basis for making this kind of decision. And then say, yes, we've decided that we're willing to pay $5 a ton or something to do something. Because we've also thought about what if we went with a $10 a ton solution, that's $5 that we can't send to some other place and do something else with. Okay. Remember, we're always choosing. Most of us have limited pocketbooks, and a dollar I put in cause A doesn't go to cause B. And I guess part of my urging would be that we consider solid waste in that context, as well as all the technical issues. We look at those kinds of value system-oriented considerations. If I could go back to a thing David mentioned, it's an interesting paradigm in the sense that we have, on one hand, we have an incinerator that we know has two burners in it, and they both use diesel fuel because we don't have natural gas available to us here at the village. And under one set of assumptions, somebody has said, well, we want to minimize diesel fuel usage. And I think we would all agree that in a vacuum, that would be probably a pretty desirable goal. However, my understanding of what will happen in that incinerator is the first stage, there's a burner, it ignites the waste. It first has to dry the waste, drive off the moisture, and then it will burn. It will not burn completely in that chamber by itself. And that's why there's a burner up above, a secondary chamber burner, which ought to be fired. What we've done by not sending any fuel to that secondary burner is now put what are known in the business as PICs, products of incomplete combustion, into the air. Dioxins is a scare word which nobody managed to bring up earlier this evening, but it's definitely something you hear at public meetings. We're not quite sure, there are a lot of theories on how dioxins are formed, but in general you need carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and some chlorine. Now, a lot of people say, well, if you take the plastics out of your waste, the chlorinated plastics, PVC, vinyl, then you won't have that problem. We've not found that to be true. There's usually enough salt just in food waste, and I'm sure that some of what goes in that incinerator has come in contact with food to probably make dioxins, especially in a poor combustion situation, as is probably existent in that incinerator. So now we have a moral question there. Which is more important to us? The health of those around us? And I'm not saying that any of us are in mortal danger from whatever emissions come out of that incinerator. Is that more important than saving the diesel fuel, or vice versa? And we should not, I guess I would caution and suggest that we not expect technology, engineers and scientists, to make those decisions for us. Those are personal, moral, ethical, religious kinds of decisions. We could, if you said we want to burn as cleanly as possible, then we could say, yes, we need to fire both burners, we need to set temperature controls, we need to put more combustion here, or whatever those kinds of technical solutions. But we can't tell you if that's the just thing to do.
I'd like to make a comment with regard to the PVCs. Doing a more complete combustion is not going to eliminate the chlorine. That's going to come out as hydrochloric gas as soon as it mixes with a little moisture. So you need a scrubber to go with it. Plus the fact that hydrochloric gas is just going to chew the bejabers out of your furnace.
What is a scrubber?
Scrubber to that just
I mean, I assume you don't mean a human being that's going to go
spray water or no. Spray a lime like lime solution. They have many different types, but a scrubber is just that. It washes the gas.
So this would mean an addition to the existing incinerator
after your complete combustion.
I mean, you'd have to put an additional item onto the incinerator.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
No, I would add to that there's also the problem of just not burning efficiently. That is, the fact that what you really need to do is you need to have a burner that burns as efficient as possible, forgetting about the chlorine, because there are other products, like I talked about before, CO2 emission and other things that you're putting into the atmosphere when you're not burning efficiently. And so that's another issue. I mean, it's using the fuel, burning efficiently, those trade-offs. Where are you going? Which direction?
So are you saying that we would need a new incinerator?
No, I think that you would have to check. You'd have to check that. I mean, one of the issues here during the winter, for example, is are the furnaces that you have, the wood furnaces, burning effectively? Okay, and I'm guessing that they're not. And so you're polluting as a result of the fact that you're not burning those efficiently. They're not checked. They're not adjusted. And that means that you're polluting your atmosphere, and it affects the village here. I was astonished by the pollution here in March.
Yeah, you got inversion.
Well, Deanne, I thought you had a
right around it.
Yeah, I'd love to move away from these technical issues, because I don't think most of us are competent to ask those questions about what do I do with this thing that I've produced in my kitchen as a result of having a dinner party for 12 people. I have X number of wine bottles, the package thing that the chicken came in, the ends of the vegetables that I chopped off, the fact that I have a lot more laundry that week than I had that we had the previous week because we have a huge stack of napkins and don't have to use paper ones, you know. But still, I have all those dishes to wash that if only two people are eating. But then, on the other hand, I think those people would have eaten somewhere, so there would have been dishes. So maybe it's not so bad that I have more dishes tonight. But the point is that when I'm faced with that question, or when I'm faced with a stack of student papers that are a year old, and they were graded on time, and I said, this is where they'll be, and they don't come to pick them up. What do I do with this paper? It's not as easy as knowing what to do with my dirty socks. Okay, I know what to do with my dirty socks. I'm well trained. Now, that part I know, but there's other things, I don't always know what to do with them. And as I listen to these people comment, it's very clear to me that nobody knows exactly what to do, and that some decisions we make personally. You know, we go to the store and decide, will we buy a huge container of soap or a small container of soap? Will we buy beer in bottles or will we buy beer in cans? And we know which is better. Well, finally, my brain just conked out. I'm sorry. My brain just conked out. And so then you do kind of go back to what are your commitments and what are the things that matter. I like to hear people talk about how do you make those decisions when you don't have the technological expertise, when you really have to believe the packager who says this is a good package or this is the... Okay, Paul?
I guess I don't know who I'm addressing to. I think maybe John. The fact that what you just said is true, and that none of us knows exactly the right decision, seems to me to place a greater burden on the legislature to require packaging to be environmentally as nearly efficient as we can be, so that those of us who are ignorant don't have to make those decisions, somebody else has made them. How feasible is that? I mean,
On both of those, first of all, some of the decisions you have to make are easy ones. The vegetable ends, you can know what to do with them. If you compost them, it's better than throwing them in with the garbage. Same thing at Holden. They know those things. They don't know that what you can do to make a burner more efficient without spending a fortune to make the burner more efficient, more clean, which you could buy scrubbers. You could make it. Holden has too small of an incinerator to be anywhere near as clean as a bigger incinerator, the kind Terrell works with, deal with. It's not going to be a clean incinerator, so what you got to do is minimize what's going there. Some of those choices are easy. Some of them, I think we could spend hours debating here and with a lot of expertise not know what makes most sense, cloth napkins or paper napkins. Cloth napkins, what kind of detergents are you using? What are you spending on energy to heat the water to clean them all?
And the dryer.
All the dryer. All those costs versus the paper. And I think it's, I wouldn't know what to say. I mean, I don't know the exact factors on how you wash napkins and how often you wash them and everything like that. So that's not an easy one to do. And then there's just plain misinformation out there, which manufacturers will, if they can sell a product better, will do so. Environmentally sound packaging, as people advertise now very heavily, which is something states are beginning to look into. Biodegradable plastic, when I first heard about that several years ago, I thought, hey, this sounds pretty great. How? I mean, plastic just doesn't biodegrade. What it does is if you put some certain types of corn products in or other types of agricultural products, can make, at least in Minnesota, that public policy wise, you don't want to be moving into biodegradable plastics because you can't recycle. But then there are other decisions that are going to be a lot tougher to make, and I think part of the reason is society at large doesn't know how to do it. There are certainly some things public can and should do. I carried a bill that banned heavy metals from use in packaging. It did pass as a provision of another bill this year. That means the nice wine foil, lead foil wine things, even though that's been tradition for thousands of years, and I'm not a wine connoisseur, and forgive me if there's a great reason for foil, lead foil instead of the cheap wines come in plastic or aluminum foil anyway. I mean, I don't know if there's a reason expensive wines have to be lead foil wrapped, but you won't be able to sell them in Minnesota in 3 years anymore. Why, just because it's been tradition and that's the way a fine wine comes, that's a lot of lead that's going in there, and frankly, most people in Minnesota are throwing it in the garbage, and that's going into the incinerator, and that's a lot of lead going in the air. And society responds much too slowly. We've known lead is a toxin for literally thousands of years. Romans knew it was a toxin, and people still use it in plumbing until Minnesota banned it from plumbing solder 10 years ago. Lead in our fuel, we haven't banned it yet. We finally required all cars to not use it, but it's still for sale. We know some of the things we have to do and move too slowly in it, but you're right, it does put a heavier burden on government. The free market will not take care of it. There's certainly a consumer movement that I think if I polled not just the Holden community, but any community in the country, polled people, would they prefer an environmentally sound package to a hazardous one, all other things being equal? Yes, 99.9% of the public does that. And even a significant, I'll say a majority, is willing to pay a little bit extra to get that. But every huckster is going to try and convince you that their product is better. How do we regulate that? We have to work on it.
There was a question here in the front.
Well, I was going to give something once this in response to this lady over here who's saying, how do we know? And it goes back to something I was told once when I was working in a particular place, was if you didn't know something, ask somebody who knew. Mm-hmm. And I think with all of the experts and the propagation of all the information that's out there, that anybody who is seriously committed to finding out something can find it out. Now, the information that's there at the time may not be true or appropriate later on down the road. For example, I was talking to Glenn earlier about chlorofluorocarbons, which are destroying the ozone layer. At the time they first came out, they were considered a godsend because they eliminated a lot of the problems with the refrigeration systems at the time, which were extremely troublesome. And now, of course, they have their own problems. So the information is going to change, but I think if you really want to know, you can find out on just about any subject what the alternatives are.
Chris, you had a question?
Well, I think that the misinformation that you talked about will apply to politicians as well as being persuaded by big business. Misinformation will come from big business. I also think that maybe it's the job of scientists and politicians to promote having all these things taught in the schools, the technical colleges, and so forth, because there's such constant change, as this young man was saying in front of me. And you think you're doing the right thing, and you find out maybe too late that you're doing the wrong thing. It's nice to be able to know there's someone in a department who is actually not being paid on the side, hopefully, to give us information. You want to answer?
Could I respond to that? I think we've got a fair amount of agreement on what's really a bad solution in any particular case. But when we talk, when the choices get closer, I'm not so sure that we're able to discern that. John's used the term environmentally sensitive,
safe packaging. Yeah.
Sound packaging. Let me create an example where we see that that might not be real clear. Should you use a package that weighs, for sake of argument, 1 ounce and it's a bubble plastic pack, or should you use one out of cardboard that weighs 4 ounces, given that you're not shipping just one, but you're shipping thousands of items, and knowing that the heavier ones will require a lot more diesel fuel to ship? I don't know the answer. As an engineer, it depends which is more important to you. And we'll have to worry about air pollution, we have to worry about fuel use, we have to worry about trees getting cut down, we have to worry about depleting oil. The choices are extremely complex and something as simple as that. And that's why, and this is not to take a shot at John as a legislator, but I I'm on very weak ground when it comes to theological sorts of things, but I thought we had a model of Ten Commandments, and we found out that's very difficult to work with. We thought we had law, and yet what we've ended up with is choice. And I am certainly no wiser than anybody else in this room in making those kinds of choices. They're a matter of heart. They're a matter of us to constantly re-examine.
But they do need to be open to our young people and our us, because we don't know, we wouldn't even know those decisions existed unless someone like you was telling us that we have to make that decision between that 1 ounce bubble that's plastic and the 4 ounces of cardboard. Because we don't have time, like she was saying, to think through that.
Yes, question here in the front, please.
What I was just going to say in regard to what the gentleman to my right mentioned, is there any clear cut, has there been any clear cut consensus even among the quote so-called experts?
On what?
On what's the better choice?
On what are the better choices in regard to what Deanne was referring to, the packaging, etc., etc. It seems to me there's as much confusion there as there is among the consumers.
I would like to comment on both those last two. First of all, in Terrell's response, first of all, there are some things that are, I'd say, easy choices. Some of them we do know. Why aren't they all clear? Well, there are 20,000 types of products you can buy in this country. 10,000 auto parts store means there's got to be 10,000 types of parts in that one store. There are a lot of products and a lot of types of packaging, so just on packaging alone, there are a lot of them. We might be able to sit down and look at all the numbers behind any one of them, tell you which is the better of the two choices. And it may not be a hard thing for you to discern. When Terrell was saying this choice between 1 ounce plastic bubble and a 4 ounce cardboard box, I'll agree that may be a tough choice. A lot of them aren't that tough. I mean, you used to go into a hardware store and buy a couple of screws. Now you buy a big blister pack with 3 screws in the thing. And it's absurd, and it's terrible, and it's better packaging. And I think we can agree on that kind of thing. I think there are going to be those tough choices, and those are the ones where you can get some experts on it who have to, nobody's going to sit there and calculate how much diesel fuel it takes to ship it here to there and so on. But you as a consumer have to make an uninformed decision about which is better. I'm suggesting there are a lot of ones that are easy choices. And to the point that government can step in and say, look, if you're making an antifreeze jug that uses cadmium in just the color of the package a little bit different, I mean, that's stupid. I mean, it really is stupid. We're not, it's for no purpose. You're not going to advertise the jug on your dining room table. It's not like you need a colorful jug. It's just because it sells better with the brighter package right next to the duller one of the competitor's brand in the auto store. There's no reason for it other than that, and they pump those things into them. We may have a little bit duller colored packaging, but I'd argue even with auto paints, auto body paints, a lot of which have some fairly toxic substances in, that we ought to be trying to make a few trade-offs there as a society in terms of what we're willing to accept for how long colors of our autos stay bright or or certainly what kinds of products our antifreeze comes in.
What's the latest decision these days on the styrofoam versus the plastic cup? Paper cup with plastic filling on it.
Gee, is there anyone in here who would like to talk?
Because a lot of people, Rachel McDonald's getting rid of their foam packaging, and now they're saying a paper with plastic filling on is just as bad as
Burger King always had the plastic coating one. Just a quick comment on that. I mentioned earlier the biodegradable plastic. There's a big sense among the public that biodegradability is a great thing. I'm not sure in a landfill, I'm not sure you want biodegradability in a landfill. The more stable the landfill is, the less likely anything is going to seep into the groundwater. In that case, styrofoam, I mean, neither of them is a great alternative, but in a landfill, I've seen things from the styrofoam packaging industry saying it's a lot better because it actually compresses better and it keeps things more stable than whatever. But basically, newspaper doesn't even degrade in most landfills. A good landfill is sealed from oxygen and other things, and I don't think you want them to degrade in a landfill. To me, I don't spend a lot of time worrying about whether it's styrofoam or wax or plastic-coated cardboard. I figure neither of them is good, and I do shop, I do buy things at McDonald's and Burger King and other places, so I'm guilty of it too, but I think the best thing to do is try and reduce the amount, and certainly some of those companies have tried that. McDonald's, I think, now has a little thin cardboard thing and a paper thing, which is, you kind of got to go by the volume, since most of it is landfilled, which is the lesser volume.
Terrell said, well, what does our faith have to say about this? When I think about this, I guess one of the things that I come back to in a funny way is in harmony with something that was said in John's earlier session today about politics being impossible, that we're on this side of the kingdom of God. There are no perfect solutions to human sin, to greed, to racism, to what you should drink your coffee out of, and quite frankly, probably you shouldn't even drink coffee if you live in the Northwest, because, you know, it's politically exploitive and it's broad, and I won't give it up. You know, finally, I just have to say, I won't give it up, and I drink whole milk, and I'll probably die of cholesterol poisoning, but I don't want to drink it, you know? I don't want to drink the other kind. Well, the point is, that it's not, that there are no perfect solutions to any of these things, and that shouldn't be a surprise, especially to Lutheran Christians. Because we know, at least we say that we know, that even though God has come and done a marvelous sacrifice on our behalf so that we might be saved, still we continue to be a mixture of sinners and saints. So that I think finally the word of hope is not that we will find the perfect solution, but that we're willing to try. And that we're willing to take a small step. One of my heroines is Dorothy Day, who talks about doing a little. Maybe doing a little is back, takes us a step backwards sometimes. But sometimes doing a little takes us a step forward, and we won't, if we don't move, nothing will happen. So I guess that's in a way an answer to my own question, is that faced with a hard or an easy decision, to make a decision and hope that most of the time it will be a reasonably good decision.
I'd like to comment from that. From your statements, and I've thought about this a little bit in the presentations that I've given. For those of you that have been in them, one of the things that I'm trying to do over and over again is not to get you to blame other people or senators or the president or whoever it happens to be, but to force you to force myself to look at what you are doing. And I noticed that somebody mentioned that well, maybe the scientists should teach our children about these things. What I would say to you is that one of the fundamental problems that I see in our country is related to parents teaching their children, not necessarily about scientific issues, but about directions for their lives so that they are enabled, have the energy to look at those issues, so that they take the time to look at those issues, and that they, you know, are willing to look at the issues.
And follow that up with making a decision.
Right.
If I could, this, not quite on the topic, but in terms of making decisions, I think an issue that comes up is, to what degree do we allow government to make decisions for us? Because there are certain decisions we can make which will have little impact on the global scale as far as with our, the issue, you know, waste disposal is one issue. You know, the other issues, I mean, every issue we face in society, moral issues such as healthcare, all those kind of things are issues which we have to find a balance between well, a socialistic kind of theocracy that we would like to see happen perhaps, or a capitalistic market. To what extent do we allow the market to dictate what's done in our country? And to what extent do we say there is a right thing to do? I get really frustrated when people can't agree on what's right, because almost it's like a reason for saying we shouldn't act because we don't have one clear vision. Like you were saying, John, there are certain things that are morally a better choice that we can make. And then I think a choice is how much power do we give the government to do that? Because they're the only ones that are going to be able to, you know, educate. I mean, I'm an educator, and so I feel strongly in that. Yet, individual action is not going to affect. There are certain issues which the government has to take a stand on. And to what extent is that power going to be given or taken?
Yeah, picking up on this, all these last comments. We have, I think, become accustomed to letting our government deal with some of these problems and been in a little tax to do so. We've gotten away, I think, from personal responsibility for the problems a bit. And that's one thing I appreciate about Garbology and Holden, and one of the things I think Dave does so well particularly, is that you can't go through a morning with Dave and not confront this on an individual level. You can't sort through this stuff, you can't pick through the village's garbage for a couple hours without suddenly realizing that there's some personal dimensions to this that you need to think through in your own life. And maybe the value of what Holden does here is not so much in recycling and the resources saved, but in the way we educate the people that experience it.
And could I just say one thing? We've talked about so much tonight about what do you with the garbage you have? And when I come home from Holden, I think about not only the garbage, how much garbage do I make, but things like how much stuff do I have in my house that I never use? And those, like Dave says, those are sort of moral decisions that we make. We don't always think of them as moral decisions, but they are. How many winter coats do you need? And finally, when you get to that point and there's one more, then you have one winter coat that's garbage. And what are you going to do with that coat? Well, if you didn't buy the last new one, you wouldn't have this problem.
I just want to make the point from, I really like the motto, reduce, reuse, recycle. You know, and recycle is the third word in there, and it's the last option in those three. Really, the first one is to think, do I even need this?
Yeah, source reduction.
You know, I quit buying pop, because you know, I don't need pop. And I do like to drink iced tea, so I can get a bag of iced tea and have iced tea for a year. You know, you just don't have to deal with carrying these bottles around. make do, do without, reuse. I found that, I decided, you know, to see how good, do without being totally obsessive, and just by having a jar in my kitchen for my compost and buying things in bulk. I was using, filling one paper grocery sack full of trash per month. And I'm just taking it into the church and dumping it with theirs. So, and I collected all of my recyclables and just put them in a couple of bags in the garage. And in 10 months, I went and I recycled that stuff. You know, you don't need that much packaging. You can really get along without. But the thing is, we're so convenience driven.
Right.
There's a place in Portland called Motor Mocha. You know, it's a motorist espresso bar. You drive through it like a Burger King. And so, you know, we're Lutherans, we have to have our coffee, and because we're, you know, pretty well off Lutherans, we're drinking, you know, $2 coffee. And so people on the way to church, you know, if they're going to be on a council meeting or something, you know, well, they stop at Motor Mocha. And instead of coming and having the free high-quality coffee that we're putting out at the church because they wanted it then, you know. Whenever I'm at a function and I look, I see what are they putting the coffee out in? If they got ceramic mugs, you know, and I want a cup of coffee, I'm going to have it. Now, if they have it in paper, I'm going to go, well, they're wasting their money, and this thing is going to biodegrade. Do I really want this cup of coffee? And then if they have them in styrofoam cups, I go, do I need this cup of coffee? And sometimes I do. I think there's a lot of little decisions, and it's not like you have to make a decision now. Your life has made thousands of decisions.
And it's an attitude.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things I see is that we need to be making these decisions so that down the road we don't become faced with catastrophic response stimuli. That, in other words, we run into a problem that's so big that we have to run around like chickens with our heads cut off to try and figure out what to do about it. I think usually if you let a problem get that far, it's 90 times out of 10, it's too late already that you're going to just really have a problem.
Terrell, you're the last one here.
I get the last word. Yeah. If I could make a personal plea, and that is, these are vital issues, they're timely, they're difficult decisions, we don't have enough information, we can't even decide the bases on which we ought to make decisions. If I could make a personal plea, and that throughout all of this, remember to keep a sense of humor. I mean, and to keep things in proportion. Remember that we're arguing about an issue that might cost $75 a ton to incinerate, or $45 to landfill, or $200 if you put it in all different trucks and drive it around and recycle it. It costs $3,000 a ton to buy breakfast cereal. Where's our sense of proportion? I just say, just sit and think. Ruminate, think about this frequently, but try and keep a sense of humor. I sure hope God is keeping a sense of humor on this whole thing.
Where do you buy your breakfast here? Mine's a lot more expensive than that.
I can't find it in the tiny quantities.